Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
Wintrust Business Lunch, WGN Radio. Jason Turner, the Chief Investment Strategist at Wintrust Wealth Management, joins us to talk a little bit about the retail sales numbers, which look good, but maybe we need to sort of pull back the curtain on those a little bit, Jason.
Yeah, absolutely need to pull back the curtain on those, John. They look good on the headline. We'd expected them to be flat and saw an increase of 0.3%, but if we peel back the onion, it's going to look a little different.
And how so? What's wrong with 0.3?
Well, we saw an 11% decline in the price of gasoline for the month of August. So we would have expected maybe a pivot of consumers to take that money they would have spent on gasoline and spend it in other areas of retail sales. And we just didn't see that. We saw that back up in gasoline prices. And we adjust for that 0.3% for inflation, and we see a really marginal increase in the headline retail sales number as adjusted.
I'm sorry, so it was adjusted how? I mean, if sales went up 0.3%, where does the adjustment come in?
Yep, so that 0.3% doesn't include the impact of inflation. So inflation accounts for about half that number, as we still see inflation marching higher. And then if we look at the individual components of that retail sales number, we saw a surprising increase in expenditures on cars, up about 2.8% in spending on autos. If we take that spending on autos out, we actually see retail sales decline for the month of August.
What does that say about autos? Is it the same number of cars and they're more expensive, or are we finally catching up on the supply chain on cars?
We've caught up a little bit on the supply chain. It's also maybe some thought of consumers to spend the money now before things are more expensive later this year. We look at the manufacturing data for autos that also just came out this week, and we've seen a decided slowdown in manufacturing of autos, I guess, in anticipation of less demand later this year.
Yeah, that's funny. Or maybe there's just a little bit of this happening, that the automakers have realized that they don't have to pump out that many cars. They don't have to fill the lots with 400 vehicles, make it more on demand, keep the price high. Remember, everybody is selling at MSRP right now or higher. They're not discounting the cars. I wonder if there's a little, I don't want to say manipulation, but it's not as bad as it sounds for the car makers.
No, I think from a corporate perspective for the car makers, not as bad as it sounds. Some of that rise in spending on autos is certainly attributed to cars going for greater than sticker.
When you say, though, that people, you think since gas is less expensive, maybe they would have spent some of the money they were going to spend on gas on other items. I don't suppose people make a conscious decision to do that, right? But maybe just at the end of the day, they look in their bank account, realize they do have a little bit more money, so yeah, we can eat out tonight, or yeah, we can buy some nice shoes. It kind of like that, huh?
Yeah, very much like that, because if we look at the areas that did do well from a spending perspective in the retail sales report, it's exactly those areas. It's service-based areas, restaurants, food away from home, those things you make those decisions on a daily basis. You don't really plan ahead. It's not big-ticket purchases like refrigerators or furniture.
So then talk to me just briefly about the stock markets in general then. The indices took a whooping the other day and then gained just a tiny bit back. Was this a reset? Is it going to go lower? What do you think about the markets right now?
I think the markets have largely taken it on the chin since we got the CPI or inflation print on Tuesday, with the S&P down about 4.7% since that announcement. What the market was anticipating is almost a certainty of the Fed moving by 75 basis points at their next meeting just a week away. And that sends the message also that the Fed's nowhere near an about face. There's no end in sight to the fiscal hawkishness we've seen out of the Fed from comments as well. And that's pushed markets lower.
Do you suppose then when it does go up 75 basis points, we're not going to see a big reaction in the markets then, that we are already anticipating that? It's not going to move that much for 0.75, right?
It shouldn't. There's still some uncertainty out there in the market. I've seen a number of articles actually in the last day or so about the possibility of an increase of 100 basis points instead of 75 basis points. We'll see volatility in the markets persist through the rest of this year until we get a little bit more of a clear path on what early 2023 is going to look like from a economic growth perspective, from a Fed policy perspective, and a little bit more resolute data on the path of inflation.
That's Jason Turner, Chief Investment Strategist for Wintrust Wealth Management. Okay, Jason, we'll call again. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks, John.
Joan Salzman is a senior reporter at CNET. Joan, what are the reviews like on the iPhone 14? Is everybody loving it? We've all been seeing the virtues of it last week. What are the critics saying now?
Right. Yeah. This is our weekly iPhone 14 update.
Yeah.
Last week and this week. So the iPhone was revealed. The iPhone 14 was unveiled last week. And the first reviews, the embargoes, the NDAs on those reviews are out. CNET's take is that the iPhone 14, it's a good upgrade for most people. But as a year-over-year upgrade, if you just had the iPhone 13, you're thinking about the 14, the benefits are sort of minimal. You know, on the outside, the iPhone 14 looks a lot like the 13. On the inside, Apple basically sort of repackaged the higher-end phone, the iPhone 13 Pro, into the iPhone 14, minus a couple things like a telephoto camera. Now, why are we just talking about iPhone? It's because iPhone, it's the single biggest selling phone in the U.S., and so its update cycles always kick off a wave of people upgrading, trying to figure out whether or not they should.
It's funny because that story and review, what you just said, reminds me of a joke we told on the radio this morning. An Apple phone walks into a bar, orders the same drink as yesterday, but pays more. That's what it is. It's essentially the same thing. For instance, everybody was talking about how cool it is that if you're in a crash, the phone knows it, and then it makes it easier to contact the authorities. That's great, but do you want to pay $800 for that feature that maybe you'll never need? And maybe you don't need it, especially if you've got a 12 or a 13, huh?
Yeah, well, you know, that joke actually, it brings up an interesting element to this latest update round that Apple did in its phone line. So the iPhone 14, if you're right, it starts at $799. It's going on sale tomorrow. But that $799 price in the U.S. is the same as what when the iPhone 13 came out as a brand new phone. It was also $799. That's true in the U.S., but elsewhere in the world, Apple raised the price from last year to this year of the new updated phone. So we are seeing, even though it's not really happening here in the U.S. in this iPhone 14 line, we are seeing that Apple is, the inflation and the supply chain costs are ratcheting up the price elsewhere in the world. And there's been a lot of complaints for people that buy iPhones and other currencies that they have to pay more.
California is suing Amazon. Why?
Antitrust. Amazon, the everything store. California's attorney general is saying that being the everything store doesn't mean that you can set basically a price floor for everything that gets sold on the internet. They filed an antitrust suit just yesterday. The argument is that when Amazon penalizes a seller who lists a product at a lower price off of Amazon, they do things such as removing that buy now and add to cart button on the Amazon listing. Those could be a huge driver of sales for that seller on Amazon. And so California's AG is saying, like, you can't, that sets the price for the entire internet. And it's costing Californians money for just about everything. Now, the suit is limited to California, but if it's successful, it could have implications across the country.
What's the Ethereum news today?
Right, the merge. So Ethereum is one of the most popular crypto platforms. And it just took this big step known as, quote unquote, the merge, moving from one type of blockchain to another. It's basically a gigantic software update. But what it means is that the software revision is going to cut how much energy it takes to have Ethereum, for Ethereum to exist, for it to be created and validated, by 99%. Energy consumption, especially in the face of climate change, is one of the most indisputable criticisms about cryptocurrency. And so this takes it a step into somewhat of a new frontier.
That's why Elon Musk sold his shares once upon a time, right?
That was the ostensible multiple reasons he had qualms with the energy impacts, the climate change impacts of cryptocurrency. But, you know, with Elon Musk, he says one thing and then, you know,
I get your
he
point.
He's going to buy
that.
Twitter and then he says the bots are a problem.
Sure, so. sure. But then what about this, though? So you say the software revision is expected to cut the network electricity use by 99%. I wonder what's the trade? Is it going to be less secure? Are there going to be fewer servers complicating the codes so that people are protected? I mean, why didn't they do this earlier, for crying out loud?
Well, the reason that it didn't happen earlier is because, you know, people have compared this to changing the engine of a spaceship while it's in the middle of a space flight, or rebuilding the foundation of a skyscraper with people still inside without actually trying to completely what they did is basically they're changing the underlying architecture of the cryptocurrency so that it can be more efficient. You know, before cryptocurrencies, people have heard of cryptocurrency mining. The way that you create cryptocurrency is mined is basically there are just huge amounts of very powerful computers all over the world run by individuals all over the place, groups all over the place that have to compute these really complex problems in order to validate cryptocurrency, in order to maintain and earn rewards for doing that. This gets rid of that idea. So people are basically like bidding their own cryptocurrency to be in a lottery to do this sort of validation. And that means that you don't have to have those gigantic arrays of computers anymore. So the decrease in the electricity doesn't necessarily reflect a decrease in security or reliability, but it does reflect that there was a major change to how this cryptocurrency operates. And with, you know, anyone who's gone through any software update on their phone or on their computer, bugs can pop up, problems can pop up, and unexpected ways that this system can be targeted maliciously could also crop up. So it's a lot of unknowns about the downsides. Rather than seeing a huge downside in the energy, well, obviously there has to be a trade-off. It's more that we just don't know what kind of problems, big or small, we might encounter now.
Give me your best 30 seconds on the Emmys and why a couple of wins were important important to Netflix.
Right. Well, Netflix has had a hard year, unprecedented subscriber losses. But Monday at the Emmys, its breakout hit Squid Game won two major primetime Emmys for lead actor and for outstanding directing in a drama series. It's notable because no other non-English language show has ever even been nominated for these major primetime Emmys. And so it gave them a win with some real prestige and cachet at a time when they're undergoing one of their greatest crises of confidence.
I was surprised that the Best Actor Award went to Squid Games. I thought that was a pretty stacked category, and I didn't see that one coming. I don't remember the name of the guy that won, but he was certainly happy to have won. They all seemed to be thrilled as well, and that's Squid Games winning two awards, helping out Netflix. Okay, we're out of time today. Let's talk again soon. Thank you, Joan.
Great to be here. Thanks, John.
Joan Salzman is a senior reporter over at CNET. Let's talk a little bit now with a guy that I wanted to have in the studio for a while. James Geyer is here, the founder and president of 555 International. He is the owner-operator of Marvin's Food and Fuel and also Morgan's on Fulton, the venue in the Fulton Market District. He is the sort of renaissance man of the business in Chicago, and he's in our studio today. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Why are you smiling so much?
Well, I'm sitting in the seat, and my father-in-law works here on the weekends during the football season, so I...
In this building or at this radio station?
At this radio station, actually.
Who's your father-in-law?
Hamp and OB, so Ed Obradovich, my father-in-law, my lovely wife, Amy.
Are you kidding?
His daughter. Yeah. So we were here last year.
You're married to Ed Obradovich's daughter.
I married Ed Obradovich's daughter. Yeah.
Is he as crazy? Is he as dangerous as he sounds on the radio when the Bears lose?
I'll leave it at you're entitled to your own perception, but, you know, he is true and true a bear forever.
What a diplomatic answer. Very interesting. Well, thanks for coming into the studio
again.
Thank you. And I have not met person to person, although we've talked before. So you have an event space. You also have a restaurant in the Fulton Market District, right?
Correct.
And how is that going?
Well, knock wood. The events business is coming back after quite a hiatus during COVID. Having a really wonderful summer season for our events and catering business on a beautiful roof deck.
Folks are having to get married on Tuesdays now.
Yeah, and, you know, people are looking for dates because Fridays and Saturdays are sold out between now and probably forever. But great corporate events now starting to be booked after a long hiatus for companies spending money. And we're looking forward to a very strong remainder of the season and into the holiday season as
well. You opened the Food and Fuel restaurant there with all the big fancy restaurants in that district during the pandemic, right?
Yeah. We opened August of 2020, which was a difficult time.
You knew about the pandemic, right?
had a good idea of what was going on or not going on. And it was more situation out of desperation in looking at what the near and short-term future was going to be, or near and long-term future. And it really looked like I had to do something on my own because it was going to be some time before somebody did something about
renting
spaces. Because
your tenant left. They did not renew the lease, which happened to so many restaurants.
Yeah.
Lowry's is gone. Bandera's gone because they didn't want to renew their leases.
And difficult times ahead, and who knows what was going to come up. And
so then what made you think you could make a go of it if your tenants couldn't?
Knowledge of the neighborhood, experience, kind of. You know, if I did, well, I had to do something because I couldn't afford to just carry a building with the events venue, also not being able to be in business and all that. So I basically didn't think, how am I going to calculate this better than others? I figured I needed to do something.
Yeah, you got
to
generate some revenue. You got the space. So then what did you start selling then? How were you successful in the midst of all of that?
In my design business, I feel quite experienced and knowledgeable of what's going on in the industry, designing and building restaurants and bars, and many of them in the district and the Randolph area, and spent a lot of time thinking about what was missing and decided to come up with something that wasn't necessarily available to the neighborhood or what I thought the neighborhood was going to be turning into.
Which was?
Approachable, affordable, accessible. You know, there's always a seat at the bar at Marvin's. We have some great outdoor spaces that we still utilize. And
not chef-driven indoor food, more
Very regular, casual. A lot of great classics you wouldn't necessarily consider.
What's on the menu?
We have an amazing vegan and vegetarian lineup as well, but with tasty options. So whether it's our couscous and eggplant meatballs, skirt steak, beautiful with mashed potatoes, beautiful charcoal grilled salmon. We run the gamut of really wonderful food, well-prepared, tasty options, and affordable.
So you've been designing spaces for a long time. You were writing a book about that, weren't you?
Talking about writing a book, and not on design, but entrepreneurial hospitality and the use of hospitality to better businesses, and not just in the hospitality industry, but what truly the word hospitality means, how the hospitality industry grows in and around that, and how other industries now can use it as a differentiation maker in supporting and furthering their business and their guest experience and return customer, repeat customer.
You mean being hospitable, or do you mean having a food space in the business?
Being hospitable. And
that's, you know, been lost by businesses in general, you think?
I think a lot of people don't think too much about it until it might be too late. Why can't we maintain customers? You know, what repeat customers are all about and how they get the word out to their friends and drive further business. So,
what's a mistake that a lot of businesses make that maybe somebody in the hospitality business, a front-facing industry, would know?
Not paying attention. Just truly not understanding where there could be a glitch or a fall up with your potential customer. It could be in medical care. It could be in an accounting office, a legal office, any sort of service industry. Ownership, leaders, managers should truly see what goes on, participate in it, and make sure that guest experience and the repeat business and the recommendation business is always going to transpire, and figuring out a way for it to work in your business and your industry.
The CEO of McDonald's said yesterday that it's hard for him to attract high-level executives to come work at the corporate headquarters in Chicago because of the image the city has, because of the reality the city has. What do you heard about that? What do you think?
I read
that
this morning as well. It's been difficult. It's tough being a business owner in the city for a lot of reasons, and I'm dedicated. They're dedicated. We all have been, and it's also part of our, as business owners, to help and assist and do what we can to better the situation. We can't just put all the blame on the city. and the issues that are going on, especially in this day and age.
Do you find it difficult to bring customers to the West Loop?
No. I think the Fulton Market District and the West Loop is doing well, developments well, commercial, residential developments. But, you know, there are challenges. And as this went from truly the meatpacking district with its low level of petty crimes, it's now, a big part of the city, the vibrant core of the city, and we have to take care of it, protect it, and make sure it doesn't go beyond what we hope the expectations to be.
I want to ask you more about that. I also want to talk more about the restaurant industry and where that's going these days. Stay right there. James Guyer is in our studio, and this is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. Steve Grzanich now joins us with more business news.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. McDonald's is expanding its downtown Chicago headquarters. The company has announced plans to move its innovation center from Romeoville in 2023 and bring up to 120 suburban employees to the West Loop. The center will focus on creating restaurant solutions and technologies. McDonald's is calling the new center Speedy Labs. It's named for the Speedy Service System that the company's founders established in 1948 to streamline kitchen operations. Meanwhile, the CEO of McDonald's says the company's employees are concerned about safety downtown, and he's urging better collaboration between the public and private sectors to solve the city's problems. He also says the business climate in Chicago needs to improve, telling the Economic Club that Chicago needs to do a better job of telling the positive parts of its story so the negatives don't dominate. The agency that runs McCormick Place is looking for ideas about fixing up the convention center's Lakeside Center. Crane says the Metropolitan Pier and Exposition Authority has issued a request for information to parties interested in rehabbing or repurposing the 51-year-old building. This comes after the location was passed over as the site of a Chicago casino. There have already been some ideas informally floated, including a large spa, lakefront residences, co-working space, a heliport, and a small music venue. McPeer hopes to get proposals by the end of this year. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Got the business of food for you now. Here's Steve Alexander.
Yep, we are sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Chicagoans know all about pub crawls. In fact, there's one pretty much every weekend somewhere. This weekend, Saturday, is the Cook County Farm Crawl. Sponsored for a sixth year by the Cook County Farm Bureau to honor the surprising amount of agriculture in our mostly urban county.
Agriculture in Cook County is in all forms, shapes, and sizes.
Yeah, that's the head of the Cook County Farm Bureau, Deb Volz.
And so we wanted to give our members and the public an opportunity to be introduced to those forms of agriculture, from farms to garden centers, greenhouses, stables, feed stores, as well as some agritourism locations where people can go and pick up their pumpkins and maybe do a hayride.
And there are too many locations on the farm crawl to name them all, but here are a few.
Gobert's Farm and Garden Center is a longstanding member. They are opening their doors and offering a discount with the passport to their fall festival entry ticket, as well as a discount to their market. We have Honeybee Gardens Farm, which offers free admission, and they have Buzz Around the Barnyard, and you can visit with barn animals, and they have paddle boating and fishing and a farmer's market.
So what you do is you go to the Cook County Farm Bureau's website, and you get a farm crawl passport, and when you visit locations on the crawl Saturday, you get the passport stamped.
And then we kind of sweeten the deal. Go to one location and have it stamped or verified. They can send it on into us, and then we have a drawing for what we call them our farm funds in the form of gift cards that people can use back at our member locations for future visits.
By the way, with a nod to Chicago's pub crawl tradition, there is alcohol involved in the farm crawl.
They're outside of the county, but Whiskey Acres Distilling is offering a buy one, get one free tour with your passport.
The Cook County Farm Crawl this Saturday. You can get your passport at the Farm Bureau website. From the farm to your belly, today's National Double Cheeseburger Day. It's also National Cheese Toast Day and National Linguine Day. Clams with mine, please. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
You know, I was just talking to you about the how difficult it is to do what you do, because staffing is just such a difficult issue for anybody in any trade. You seem to be very empathetic to your customers and employees. I would imagine working for you would be fun. But is it hard to attract employees and keep employees?
Difficult, yes. Both finding them, finding the right staff, training, taking the time, them taking the time and care to truly learn the business and be part of an energized team, but difficult across the board, both with those that we hire in the design and production business, and then also at the level of food service and the catering industry.
Really, the design and production business is really more your forte, right? I mean, that's really what you've been doing all these years.
I've been doing that. You know, our business, 34 years old, knock wood. I've been in the hospitality industry the same amount of time, being involved with design, build, and
what
owner and operate.
What do you say to this strategy? Most of us just say, look, just pay the people more. Give them $25 an hour, and then they'll stay. And then pass the cost along to me on the menu. Make a burger instead of $14, make it $15. Am I going to notice?
I believe you will. A certain amount of that is integrity as well, personal integrity in building your business. You can't just be irresponsible with what you're spending, and you can't just float that on to the customer. They're not always happy about that.
But so will a higher wage keep employees or attract employees?
I believe it goes a long way too, but building also the right environment, a place where they want to be, want to work. There's lots of competition, and you lose employees to others that are just throwing money at people, and you know they might move on and realize it wasn't a better situation.
I just threw $25 an hour out there as a silly number. What do you pay your employees?
We don't have anybody that makes less than $26 an hour right now. Across the board. So the idea of
a
living wage, you know, we work hard to make sure that there is staying up with certainly what the city and the state mandate, but stay ahead of that.
One last thing about this business of Chicago being a safe place to attract customers or employees. And you say you feel that too, right?
Yes.
To the people in the suburbs that think, I don't know about coming down to Chicago to a restaurant or to a venue, maybe to have that corporate party or that wedding reception or the rehearsal dinner. What do you say about all that?
We're open for business, right? It's a big city, growing neighborhoods. Doesn't matter where you're headed. Please come on out. I think, you know, a lot of what we hear, it's not sensationalism. We have real problems. We have real issues. But ultimately, business is growing and thriving in a lot of neighborhoods, thankfully coming back after the pandemic with opportunities and those that are willing to come out and enjoy. And we're very grateful for that.
Companies are coming to you. That is your event business is good?
Yes. Finally, the corporations appear to be now throwing events and planning for travel, conventions, an important part of our business here in the city of Chicago for everybody. So looks like it's coming back, and hopefully that'll stay really strong going forward.
Well, I'm glad that you guys are there. When does the book come out?
It's sometime from now.
You are writing a book, right? We've been talking about writing the book for a long time.
Yes, it's in process, but it's truly an evolved process to make sure that what we're working on and what we're trying to proposes coursework through Tulane Business School.
Oh, interesting.
Is something that, you know, works in many industries. So,
it might be more of a textbook then than a general audience book?
A combination. I think it'll be insightful for those that are owning businesses, want to own businesses, entrepreneurs, obviously. A lot of this truly does come from the hospitality industry, but what we learn in that business on maintaining and growing customer and guest experience.
Don't want to brag, but I got him a cup of water.
Yeah, thank you. That enhanced my experience.
That passes for hospitality here at WGN Radio. James Geyer is the founder and president of 555 International. And again, he's got Marvin's Food and Fuel and Morgan's on Fulton for all of your events and dining needs. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you. Pleasure. Look forward to seeing you again.